the moment of urgency that we find ourselves in to make sure that the US AI industry is allowed to grow as much as it needs to really creates a lot of public policy opportunity that I think is going to improve our ability to reduce electricity prices, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and resolve a variety of other social ills.
Here are the table stakes. AI is increasing energy usage across the board. It's also enhancing productivity, improving businesses, and making our lives better. So how can we decrease energy use while amplifying our output? That's what we'll get into today with Joseph Mikit, Director of the Energy Security and Climate Change Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Joseph, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So honestly, how did you get into climate science?
I started my academic training as a mathematician, and I was always very interested in thinking through how we use data, inference, formal tools around decision theory to inform the way we tackle problems. Around 2007, the IPCC report AR4 came out. This is one of these big collections of scientific opinion on matters of climate change. Around that time, Al Gore published his movie, An Inconvenient Truth. So it was just sort of in the air. I was a young graduate student. I was probably slightly overconfident. And I thought, hey, I'm going to take all these mathematical tools and bring them over here to this physical science where I can see they're making trivial mistakes in how they're thinking about uncertainty and probability. I spent years as a graduate student in physical oceanography or chemical oceanography. And then over time, my research evolved to focus on how do we think about incorporating data and measurement into the computer models we use to assess things like human-caused climate change.
It's this incredible thing, but the elephant in the room is really the energy consumption, right? We know these models are just power hogs. How big of a challenge is it for this, like, this growing demand for energy as these companies use AI?
Well, the reality is that we're not totally sure. It could be quite manageable. It could be a huge challenge. Our work at CSIS, where we're always trying to get our hands around, we know this is an issue, how big of a problem might it be, was inspired by that exact question. We worked with a team of economists and energy scholars at our institution to look at three different scenarios. One that sort of is analogous to the dot-com boost. So for the last few years, there's been a ton of money coming in to build generative AI data centers. There's, you know, these very power-hungry chips. We see just extraordinary plans for spending. There's a scenario where the demand doesn't quite realize all of that planned investment, and you kind of go back to background levels. We looked at a second scenario that was more akin to the PC revolution in the workplace, where there really was a big change, a sort of decadal-length massive investment in retooling the workplace. Then we looked at a third that we call the second industrial revolution. I think these sort of map onto people's rough qualitative pictures of what the future of AI may be. It could, as you say, get just massively increased productivity. It could be used by firms throughout the economy. It could create entirely new business sectors. That's the very high-end energy demand scenario. Or, you know, we could kind of go back to that we're growing generative AI data centers, but they're kind of roughly analogous to traditional data centers, which has been a pretty manageable growth signal in the energy sector. Between those different scenarios, we found that by the end of this decade, generative AI data centers are going to use somewhere between 40 and let's say 90 gigawatts of electricity a year. On the high end, if you sort of calculate how much uptime you expect those things to have, you get about 400 terawatt hours of power use a year. That's roughly 10% of the grid. And so by the end of this decade, this could be a very significant source of energy demand, and one which our electricity system, it's all electricity, and it's a source of demand that our electricity system is really going to have to change if we're going to be able to realize all of that economic and strategic potential.
I guess it makes sense because you start seeing not just obviously the energy usage, but the cost of the energy upkeep, that you start seeing these new ways of inferencing models or these new ways of training models that are much less power hungry. And there's like hope on the horizon that maybe like AI will be as powerful as they say it's going to be, but the power consumption might not be at the level that we're anticipating at the current model, right?
Yeah, I don't know that I would trade any of the figures, even the ones we generated, as precise.
Yes.
but I would think that the way I think about it is, even if we find or we realize these efficiencies, like you say, for AI uses, this is just reducing the cost, right? And so Jevons paradox tells you that you're just going to use more.
What paradox?
It's a paradox from economics that the more efficiently you're able to use resources, the more you end up utilizing. Here's a simple example. Relative of mine early in the 2000s bought a Toyota Prius, one of the very early models, right? It was a total transition in the fuel efficiency of a just standard five-seat sedan.
Right.
Immediately took a road trip to the Grand Canyon.
Okay, I get it.
Because it was so cheap.
Yeah.
Right? And so in the world where we realize those efficiencies, what you may see is whether it's on devices or personal computers or closer to the end user, a lot more use. And so really, I think your optimism about AI roughly scales with your expectation for how much energy it's going to use. But even if you take the low end piece of our scenarios, there's a lot of work to do to make sure that we can supply all that power and meet other broader societal goals.
Some of the work that you do with the government is like guiding them on how much power we need to run this kind of future.
Well, we talk about it a lot. The government doesn't decide how much power we build or how much power we generate in the US, just to be clear. That's a process that's largely privately driven here in the United States with intermediaries at various points of regulation. We can get deep into utility regulation and rules if you want. But what we're trying to assess in our work is to what degree this potential mismatch, if our ability to build power cannot meet expected demand from AI, what does that mean? That means we're not going to build as much of this incredibly valuable tool as we would like to without causing price issues or reliability issues on the grid. And those are scenarios that we want to avoid because there's public good associated with those things. So that's where the government may have to step in. So it's not so much that the government says, okay, we have this very, very forward view on how much computation society needs, and therefore the government's going to build all these power plants. That's not how it works. What we're able to do is say, where can government activity in the places where it touches the power sector, or really other parts of the AI stack, which are kind of equally interesting, though maybe less urgent, where can government policy enable a more efficient mediation of supply and demand, where the supply is the electricity and the demand is AI services? And there's a variety of tools that we've discovered that can help, I think, do that.
There's a tremendous amount of computation that people want to use, and it's affecting our power grid. What would the government actually do about it? Like, would they just be like, okay, you got to relax on the computation, the AI workloads, or they start having like brownouts and rollouts of power? Like, I genuinely don't know.
Yeah, no. Ideally, we would not have brownouts
right?
Those are not good. There's a few different things or a few different ways I would think about that question. Think about what's going on right now in industry. So within the industry, you've got kind of a handful of firms here in the United States all rushing to build as much computational capacity as they can. Now, this is because they're meeting emergent immediate demand. It's because they're racing each other for market prominence. And then from, you know, our seat in Washington, it's also because we're competing internationally to be at the front of this, you know, revolutionary portion of the economy. If you are building a large data center in the United States, because our electricity grid doesn't have a lot of what we call spare capacity, meaning it's not like your house where you've got extra plugs going around the place. So when you get a new appliance, you can just bring it inside and plug it in. Our grid in the United States is relatively finely balanced and doesn't have a lot of sort of analogous open plugs. And so when you need to build what are now some of the largest new electricity loads we have in the United States, these sort of, let's call them gigawatt scale data centers, you need to wait in line until the local power authority can confidently provide you the power, or you need to bring the power yourself. Because if they plugged in too early, you would get exactly the things that you mentioned. You might get grid instability. You might get just like rising prices because they had to bring electricity in from other regions. You get a lot of negative outcomes that neither the citizenry nor do I think the companies really want to cause.
How can infrastructure and operations be leveraged to mitigate this demand?
Think about what we need to achieve here. So over the next few years, because let's take the optimistic's case, let's build for optimism. We need to build really large data centers and probably a lot of them in the United States. Just as a like kind of baseline for your audience, a 1 gigawatt data center is like one of the largest electricity loads you have in the United States, right? That is a Hoover Dam worth of electricity. And you can't just build Hoover Dams, right? You have to build the whole system to meet that much load. In the context of, you know, building these large projects, you need to sort of finely match how much electricity generation you're bringing and the demand as the two rise together. And then what are the characteristics that you need to have? By and large, where we are today, because of the spare capacity issue, you need to bring as much new generation almost as you're adding load. There's some fine-grained details on that statement, and some power nerds will disagree, but that's why we have an open public dialogue. You want to be able to do that relatively quickly because of the sense of urgency around building these things, both in the United States and for market competition between firms. And you want to build it as cleanly as possible. So to achieve those three goals, there's a couple key places where the federal government can help with respect to infrastructure. One of them is just very large electricity transmission lines. It turns out when you're building large electricity loads, like these data centers are, and then you're connecting large new power plants, one of the things you need are not the small distribution scale power lines that go to homes and businesses that we are familiar with, but the mega transmission lines associated with moving power over long distances. Those are things that are approved by the federal government often if they cross state lines. There's sort of there's a detailed regulatory process that governs where they're built and how they're planned and all that kind of stuff. Accelerating that process, in my view, would be extremely helpful because one of the things we see in the empirical data of where data center developers are building, they're building in the places where they can most readily attach themselves to high voltage or be in the vicinity of high voltage transmission lines. The second thing that the federal government can do, because the federal government plays such a significant role in the development, licensing, and approval of nuclear power plants. When we think about nuclear power, not really a solution that's speedy, but a solution that in our assessment we need for long-term sustainable growth of this industry and sort of energy security. It's a grid-improving technology, so sort of the energy security of the electricity system. The federal government, I think, plays a significant role there. The last thing I will say, and this is more on the private sector side, there's all sorts of emerging solutions around load flexibility, having data centers being a little bit more actively managed so that of periods of time where other elements of the grid are drawing a lot of electricity, data centers can throttle down a little bit. Right now, most data centers run full bore all the time because the things that they do are highly economically productive and the owner spend a lot of money on those chips and they want to use them. But I suspect in the future, we'll see a lot more flexibility on the demand side so that the whole system can balance more efficiently. And that helps you address the need to match every new chip or every new data center with the equivalent of a new Hoover Dam.
So let's talk a little bit about the private sector side. As a business leader, how can you start reframing energy usage within your individual AI operation?
So I would look at it in two ways. One is all this energy use is delivering value. So as long as you're delivering the maximum amount of value you can, I don't think people should feel bad about using the energy, right? This is the natural byproduct of positive economic activity. That's great. I do think the private sector is going to play an instrumental role in making sure that as society goes through this transition, the power that we're using for AI data centers is clean, that we're making the right investments in nuclear. That's, you know, that involves firms making decisions, maybe taking some risks on new power sources, as well as making sure that our policymakers know how important it is that we have stable, inexpensive, and clean power.
It's really interesting to think that AI computation, all this big generative AI and AI agentic workloads for all these tremendous enterprises are actually going to push forward nuclear adoption in this country, because it feels like, when was the last time we built a nuclear power station?
We finished one last year or the year before, but it was the first one we'd built in decades. And so, yeah, you're starting to sense, we're not there yet, but you're starting to sense that there is a moment of opportunity here. And I have to say, you know, we, for the last couple decades, our electricity system has been growing very, very slowly. And that was convenient, actually. It meant we could reduce greenhouse gas emissions by substituting out coal plants and bringing on a mixture of natural gas and renewables. Price management is relatively easier when demand is stagnant. And just the, you know, that industry, its leadership is unfamiliar with rapid growth, except for a couple places in the United States like Texas. So it is the urgency of the AI data center issue and the sort of the need that it's placing on the power sector is causing the whole industry to look again at itself and say, how do we be more innovative? How do we capture more financing? How do we grow? And for all the other things we want to accomplish as a society, which will be AI enabled, but are not expressly AI, that's, you know, taking a leadership stance in new chip manufacture or having a lot of electric vehicles, all that's going to rely on more electricity anyway. It's just that the AI revolution, in my view, is sort of the tip of the spear for the entire economic frontier being about electricity.
Well, I also think that because AI, at least the AI tools that we have, is so democratized that everybody has access to these incredible tools, that might push the needle quicker too, right?
Yeah, I think so. Both as a matter of demand and because you start looking at finding efficiencies throughout the economy, and AI is clearly going to enable people to find new and innovative ways both to use energy or deploy it.
So what do you find the most compelling about this intersection between AI and energy?
Currently for me, because I'm deeply embedded in public policy conversations, I'm excited about the forcing function that AI is placing on policymakers, whom your audience would not be surprised to know typically don't want to take a lot of risks, right? They don't always want to read our white papers and act on our suggestions. But the moment of urgency that we find ourselves in to make sure that the US AI industry is allowed to grow as much as it needs to really creates a lot of public policy opportunity that I think is going to improve our ability to reduce electricity prices, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and resolve a variety of other social ills.
And so this is, again, part of this idea of allowing the US to be the leader in AI, right? And in order to do that, we need more power plants. We need more energy available for these giant data centers.
That's exactly right. But at the same time, or following on from that, we're going to need more electricity for electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Right. You're going to need more electricity for homes and businesses, and we're going to need more electricity to power all the economic growth that we expect to see from AI. And in that context, as a policy entrepreneur, the policy solutions that we can apply to help enable AI, in my view, enable all those other positive outcomes.
What are the ways that businesses and individuals who are using these tremendous AI workloads can actually run them more efficiently and with less energy use cost?
It really depends on whether you're a producer or a user. On the producer side, I think there are obviously a lot of opportunities to think about how do we make our services a little bit more flexible. You know, when I talk to folks in the industry, there's all sorts of nuanced thinking going on now about how much does the firm put some power generation capacity or maybe some energy storage capacity on site at a data center so it can interact more positively to the grid. A lot of the projects that we're seeing developed are going to involve what in the industry or what in the power sector is called co-location. So you have a large data center or a large data center campus, which is physically adjacent or very nearby the generation that it will consume from. But that generation can go and serve the grid as well. On the user side, I think there's probably all sorts of efficiencies we're going to find as people figure out, well, I should be using this model for this task and this model for this task. There's probably a lot of Kia problems being solved with Cadillac models at the moment that will kind of resolve that over time.
I think when people are sending a query to any LLM, they're like, it's nothing. It's just like a Google query. But they don't recognize really how much consumption that is.
Yeah, but what's interesting is the gamers do know, right? Because the same architecture that we're, or I would say similar architecture that we're now using for generative AI has been in consumer gaming PCs for a long time. And when you go shopping for a consumer gaming PC, one of the things that they'll sell you on is this one is more efficient. It's going to require less of a large power supply, less cooling equipment in your stack. And now we just have that. That's like now close to a societal problem as we move from sort of single units to hundreds of thousands of units in these large data centers.
What advice would you give to business leaders about how they employ new AI tools with respect to their energy output?
I think we have only begun to probe how these tools are going to be helpful, not so much in the energy output of the tools themselves, but in helping society manage the energy system more efficiently, more dynamically. There are all sorts of problems that we face in the electricity power sector, coordination issues, time of use issues, market and pricing issues, that I suspect AI-driven tools or agents will really, really help.
If you had to bet on one application of AI that will define energy innovation in the next 5 years, what would it be?
I'll take a main bet and I'll take a hedge.
Okay.
I do suspect that AI is going to really enable a higher degree of investment and in innovative and low carbon technologies, which we know we need to solve our broader energy and climate challenges around the world. And I think we've only begun to see how AI-enabled development in the energy sector will reduce costs and make things more available, particularly for people in the developing world. I'm confident that we'll use these tools in developed countries quickly. It's really a question of access and availability in the developing world. The second, the hedge, will be in applications around material science and other fundamental sciences, right? There are problems that we would like to solve, nuclear fusion being one of them, which if we could solve them, would enable entire revolutions in how we think about energy, where we source it from, and how much we pay for it. And so if you think in sort of the medium term, I think it will create lots of new models for developing our energy system in a more positive direction. But in the medium to long term, I think it can be truly transformative. But that applies to probably most areas of the human enterprise.
Joseph, seriously, thank you so much for spending time with me and answering these
questions. Thank you for having me. It's great.
To all of you, thank you so much for listening. Make sure to follow and subscribe to AI in Action to stay in the know about the latest technology in the game. See you soon.